Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, June 7th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Ishana Knight Shyamalan's new movie, The Watchers, and we're going to present interviews with Shyamalan and star Dakota Fanning. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ, let's get into a discussion about The Watchers. We're going to start off with some spoiler-free thoughts about the movie. What do you think about this one?
So let me preface this by saying, for those that are listening at home and don't know this already about me, I am a dyed-in-the-wool Shyamalan stan, defender, all of that. I even got to say that to Ishana's face. So let that be very clear first off. I think this movie shows a lot of potential for Ishana Knight Shyamalan, like a lot of potential. I think she has an incredible directorial eye. Anything that I was not super thrilled with about this movie is because this movie is very honest to the novel that it's based on, I think to a fault. But I do think that there are some moments of it that like let me know, okay, this is a first feature for sure. She's very, very young, but there's something here. There's something really cool here. I just don't know if it came together as well as I would have hoped.
Yeah, I'm actually like right in the same boat. Our review, which Jeremy Mathai wrote, I'm going to link to that in the show notes. It says, Ishana Knight Shyamalan's nightmarish folktale is an uneven but promising debut. And that's exactly how I feel about the movie. I think, let me start with the positives, right? Like the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree in terms of like the way that some of the plot eventually becomes pretty ridiculous in this movie. But I did think that she showed a lot of promise behind the camera. There's like a real spookiness to being lost alone in the woods that she captures really well here. There's some awesome shots in this movie that don't obnoxiously call attention to themselves. I really enjoyed the cinematography, especially the color palette. I really, really liked that a lot of this movie takes place at night, but I never felt like I couldn't see what was happening. So all of that stuff I really appreciated about the movie. And it's really easy to see why she was drawn to this material, because there are so many ideas to mine from it, right? Like there's the story as it is, like I said, it kind of goes off the rails a little bit, and we'll talk about that in spoilers in a second. But the richness that's there, you know, there's all these concepts like feeling trapped and what it's like to constantly be watched, and the sort of uneasy feeling that there might be a better version of yourself that you're not living up to, and the fear that somebody might be coming to take your identity. Like all these ideas are in this movie. They're in the text and they're hinted at in different ways, but I personally didn't feel like the movie really capitalized on them in exciting ways. But what do you make of that?
So what's interesting is that when I watched the movie in the theater and I left, I was like, wait, I really, really like this movie. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I was like, okay, now there is some stuff that kind of falls apart for me. But I think it's because the themes in it are so interesting to me. And I am such a sucker for a horror movie that is not a horror movie, if that makes sense. Because to me, this is a dark fantasy more than it is anything, because it feels like a fairy tale. It is full core for sure. but this movie feels like a dark fairy tale to me. This honestly feels very in line with like Lady in the Water from her dad. For mm-hmm. me. Like,
yep.
That
I've thought about that a bunch of times watching
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Like, and I think that that is going to dictate how people feel about this movie. Like, if you are expecting a Shyamalan movie that is like traditional horror that, you know, her dad had made, you're not going to get that. If you're looking for something that is going to defy genres and it's going to play in a bunch of different sandboxes, you're definitely going to get that. And there are some themes in here that are hinted at that I'm glad are just hinted at, because I think it makes the story stronger. I think honestly the biggest fault that I have with it is I wish that she would have taken some more creative liberties from the source material. That like I think that if she would have made this a little bit more her own, I think people would be feeling a lot differently. But mm-hmm. because I have read the book, I know that she did, you know, she was very truthful to it. And I think it was to the film's detriment, because I think she's more interesting than this text, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so now let's get into spoilers. We'll talk a little bit about some of the ways that the movie kind of goes off the rails in its back end. I've not read the book, but my issues with this movie are almost all confined to the script. And it sounds like, from what you're saying, she was really...
the weird ending, the weird reveal, like that's all, it's all in the text. This is a book series. It's getting a sequel. I think it's coming out in October. The book is getting a follow-up. So yeah, it's from the book. And you know, it is what it is, but it does, again, it feels like a fairy tale down to this character having a dead parent and an animal sidekick.
yeah, totally. And, the opening narration, I thought, really did a good job of actually like dropping you into that world and sort of setting the stakes for that fairy tale tone. Typically, narration in a movie is viewed as like a crutch, right? Like it's kind of like don't do narration unless you're in a film noir or unless you have a really, really good reason for it. But in this specific case, I thought that part actually worked with the vibe that she was going for here. Some of my issues, like I personally found the Kira and Daniel characters to just be way too chill about their situation. Like they've settled into their new circumstances of being trapped in the coop, they call it. And they've been there for months and they seem to just be calmly going about their business. And like, of course, it's easy for me to say, you know, I don't want to like backseat drive or Monday morning quarterback or whatever, but like they just feel like such passive characters that I would have really appreciated some indication that they spent their early days of captivity freaking out and trying every possible way to get out of that forest, because that's what it seems like Dakota Fanning's character, Mina, is doing in this movie. And when you put her next to these other characters who just kind of seem like they've accepted this new reality that they're living in, I'm just kind of like, what are we doing here? Like, who are these people? What's going on here? So what did you feel about, or what did you think about these supporting characters in this movie?
So Georgina Campbell's character, I think for me, at least, I understood why she was in this like almost weirdly optimistic state, because she's delusional at this point, because her husband has left. He's going out in the forest. We know that if he goes out in the forest, he's gonna be dead. We know that. But she has to cling on to the hope of the idea that he's coming back, because otherwise that means accepting the reality, which is the inevitability of you're trapped here forever. Mm-hmm. So her character makes total sense to me as to why she acts this way. Oliver Finnegan's character, Daniel, is the one that I struggle with a little bit more, because he feels very inconsistent, because I'm supposed to think that he's, you know, a little, he's the person that's going to be willingly letting, like locking them out of the coop at one point and kind of losing his marbles a bit here. But at the same time, he's like very easily manipulated. He's just very inconsistent for me. So he's the one that is very, very confusing. And then Olwen Fiore, whose last name I'm pretty sure I just butchered, but I adore her. I really like her as Madeline, because she does feel to me the most fairy tale of all of them. She feels like the ominous witch in the woods, or the ominous fairy godmother type that tells you everything, and everything is a little bit overwrought, but it makes sense for her if we're going to go with this like twisted fairy tale sort of thing. Yeah. She makes the most sense of any of these characters for me.
Yeah, totally. And I enjoyed her performance as well, even though, I mean, it seemed to me to be pretty obvious what was going on. Like, as soon as they introduced 100%. The idea of changelings, it's like, oh, well, you can't trust that any of these people are who they actually say they are. And that seems like a revelation that didn't really cross Mina's mind at any point. And I was like, we're talking about changelings here. Come on. You got to like catch up with what's going on. But I really try not to get hung up on stuff like this, but you're telling me that if you're trapped in the coop for months on end, you don't explore every last nook and cranny of that place. Like when that reveal comes late in the movie that there's a big Lost style hatch under a rug in the middle of that room, that's kind of when the movie lost me. Like I kind of checked out at that point, because if these characters aren't going to care enough about their own situation to take an active inventory of everything that they have and really like lock into their surroundings and everything, why should I care about them as a viewer? You know, like, so
Me, like I was able to buy into it, if only because I'm very obsessed with the idea of like, you know, compliance and the way that people, if somebody establishes themselves as a leader or as a person with authority or power, you tend to just listen to them. Like it is just part of human nature. So if we have these characters that we know have been there for months, but they're meeting Madeline, who claims to have been there for years and is like, I've torn this place apart. You're not going to find anything I haven't found or whatever. I would believe her. I would be like, you're right. I'm not wasting my time. I'm just going to rewatch this like reality TV show DVD for the 50th time. That aspect I am so obsessed with, because that is what so many of us are doing when we watch reality TV, is like we are watchers, but at the same time, it's a curation of what we're watching, which is what the watchers in this movie are watching, is a curation of what these characters have chosen to present to them. Like, oh, they like it when I dance. That's a performance. Like that's not authentic to who you are. So like those parallels, I want more of that movie. What I wanted her to take this and run with. But again, you know, she's being respectful to the source material. So like there is definitely some suspension of disbelief required for the logic of a lot of these characters, which I fully admit I'm a lot nicer to in a lot of aspects, because I just went with it. I was like, oh, I get it. Madeline's been there forever. If she would have told me I've torn this place apart, I would have been like, all right, and listened and just went with it.
Yeah. What you're talking about though, like the idea of like that sort of meta commentary, right, about like, you know, these characters being watched and then being able to apply that to our lives and like social media and the internet and all of that kind of stuff. Like this movie like toys with those ideas and kind of like walks up to the line and like engages with them just a little bit. But I'm right there with you where I just like really wanted more of that, because that was where I felt like the movie was at its most interesting, was when it was using this sort of horror premise as like a launch pad to having a larger conversation about like real life issues. And it kind of felt like the launch pad broke or something, like they one of those gymnastics things that you run and, you know, like, anyway, yeah, I thought that like that was where the movie was at its most fascinating, when it was like really engaging with these ideas, and then it just kind of moved on and like got back to the creepy imagery, which was like cool and like well done. But what
those
did you think
monsters
about, like,
legit scare me.
I was just gonna ask you, what do you thought about like the creature design and the monsters and stuff?
Yeah, I when the movie, like when the social embargo broke and we were allowed to talk about it, I was like, some of those visuals are nightmare inducing. The one that really got me is when they stand up and you see how tall they actually are, because they tend to run on all fours. I hate things that are like too tall than what they're supposed to be. Like things like that just bother me. Like anything that, like Uncanny Valley doesn't bother me, but like extended Uncanny Valley bothers me. And that is where these monsters kind of fit in for me. Like they really creep me out. And there's a great scene in a cave where they like show their teeth, and it reminds me so much of Attack the Block. That also creeps me out. Like when things have really, really bright teeth. This is like a side tangent, but I think it's a fun anecdote. I swear to you, my best friend and I were in the woods one time. Were we sober? No, we were not, but let's not get hung up on that. I swear to you, we were in the woods and there was this like figure in the trees that was really, really tall. And we were like, what the hell is that? That's clearly like a really tall man or something. And then it smiled at us and had like really bright white, like vibrant teeth. And we like sprinted out of the woods and we have no explanation. We have no idea what it is. And we've just convinced ourselves that we were like, you know, it was drugs, who knows? But like when the things show their teeth in the cave in this movie, I like transported back to that time in my life and thought I was going to have a panic attack in the theater. I was like, no, not this again.
Interesting. Okay. So I didn't think that those were teeth. I thought that the watchers in that moment were, because there's like Mina is standing in this circle of light, right? Like she's down in the in this burrow and the light is coming straight down and she's looking at a watcher who is like in the dark sort of coming toward her slowly. And you can't really see what's going on like by design because you don't want to get like a full on look at this creature, you know, straight up. I thought it was the creature kind of putting fingers out to represent what Mina did over the window.
Oh, here's the thing. You're absolutely right. It's probably that. I was just losing my mind and couldn't maintain logic at that point. But no, I'm pretty sure you're right because they imitate. That's yeah. The whole point.
Yeah. What did you think about that? Like the idea of turning this into something, I guess, explainable. Because like there's a version of this story where you don't know what these creatures in the woods are, but this movie goes into like this, it takes, once it defines the creatures, then it really starts to get into like the mythology behind these changelings. And like, we've seen changelings and I think Madeline says that they're known by a bunch of other names and fairies and stuff like that. So like, obviously we've seen depictions of these creatures or similar creatures in other media before, but I was kind of like a little disappointed when they put a name to it instead of just being, you know, like some sort of mysterious force or something out there. It's kind of like the idea of like, you know, something is scarier when it's in the shadows. And then when it comes into the light, it's maybe a little bit less scary. But what did you make of that?
I like that they named it, if only because there are so many different interpretations of these characters. Because you're right, we've seen plenty of different changelings. We've also seen plenty of different fairies. I think people oftentimes forget that fairies are not always like the tooth fairy and like these very nice, pretty, sparkly sort of beings. Like historically speaking, they're tricksters and they're mean. And mm-hmm. So to be like, yeah, these horrifying creatures in the woods, they are the fairies of this woods and you should not aspire to be a fairy princess. I think like I like that sort of thing. And I also think it helps people buy into the folklore aspect of it, because I think honestly that is one of the major differences between folklore and, you know, just regular ominous horror, is that once you put a name to it, you add a history to it. Mm-hmm. You add a mythology to it that people can dig deeper into.
Yeah, that's true. I actually did really like the design of that that tomb, I think it was, that they came across as they're trying to make their escape, which has like these like alien looking drawings and stuff on it of those mm-hmm. creatures. I just thought that was a really cool visual. And the production design in general in this movie, I thought was pretty spot on. Like even when they get down yeah. into that hatch and stuff, like it looks really cool down there. Even if like the idea that this professor hired one-off freelancers to build this facility one day at a time and then allowed them to be murdered one by one was like very laughable to me, but like the end result looks cool as hell, you know? So, yeah, I'm kind of mixed on that as I am on this movie as a whole, really. But I guess, was there anything else that you wanted to mention about the movie before we set up your interviews?
So the thing that I most appreciated about this movie is that this movie to me very much feels like something that came from the mind of somebody who grew up watching M. Night Shyamalan movies, being on his set, being you know, emotionally connected with the way that M. Night Shyamalan's brain works. Like it is so like noticeable, like it is palpable. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a very cool thing. And I also think that this is an example, because it gets into like a touchy territory, and I do mention it in the interview with Ashana, but nepotism and like nepo babies aren't inherently a bad thing, because I don't think anybody can look at the world and interpret horror the way Ishana does without growing up in the household that she did. I feel similarly about like Brandon Cronenberg or Jennifer Lynch, people where I'm like, your dad is a weirdo. And because of that, you look at the world differently. And that's really interesting and cool to me. And so I'm really, really hoping that people don't write her off and is like, oh, this movie was a flop. We're never trusting her again. Because there's something there. In the same way that I think, you know, I personally don't think that M. Night Shyamalan has ever made a bad movie, with the exception of Avatar The Last Airbender, which we just, we don't look at that one. but anything that he's going to do that is like very original and is like very horror, I think there's something always really interesting going on there. And I feel the same way about her. I think there's something really interesting going on here. I would love to see what she does with an original script, something that she comes up with on her own, and doesn't have, you know, any of those pressured limitations that can sometimes come with adapting something. Because I think she's got something going on. And also, she's so young.
Yeah, she's like 24, I think. Yeah, 23, that's insane. 24.
She's so young. And to have such a, like, an incredible eye already. Like, she, yes, her dad. And the thing too, okay, I'm on a tangent here. Everybody thinks that The Sixth Sense is M. Night Shyamalan's debut film. It's not. That's not his debut feature. He made a movie with Rosie O'Donnell before that no one ever talks about. So like this, yes, this is like her big debut feature. This is her introduction to the world at large. But that doesn't mean that she doesn't have her Sixth Sense, her Signs, whatever, coming later. Like, I fully believe we have not seen like what she's fully capable of yet. So I understand people who are going to be like, I don't like this, but like, nah, she's got something. She's got something.
Yeah, totally. When you combine the fact that she's so young, she's in her mid 20s, and she's trying to be, you know, really accurate and faithful to this book. And a lot of the issues that I have with this movie are in the book itself. Like, it would just be silly to write her off at this point. And I hope that at least the movie does well. I have no idea like what the tracking is on the movie or any of the financial outcome or anything like that. But I hope that it does well enough for her to at least get another opportunity or something, because especially if she's able to, like you said, come up with something original, or maybe like work with a co-writer or something to kind of tighten up the storytelling and cook up some better dialogue. I think, you know, that we're like on the precipice of somebody who has like a ton of talent just becoming, you know, all she needs is like one thing to become like the next big voice in horror or whatever. So
totally.
And even that is like a lot of pressure to put on somebody. And I think you talk with her.
Yeah,
about
we
like
do.
That,
we talk about that.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to put that on her. But I just think that there is a lot there, even though this movie didn't necessarily like cohere in the ways that I really wanted to.
But, and I will say, but as an adaptation of that novel, she does crush it, which I tell her. I'm like, because I read the book, because I just love the Shyamalan family so much. But I read the book and I was like, oh yeah, she'll crush this. And she did. It's a very faithful adaptation of that book. She did a really good job adapting it. It's just the problems are the book, not her.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll get back into your interviews with M. Night Shyamalan and Dakota Fanning.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so let's just jump right in. Here is your conversation with Ashana Night Shyamalan.
Full disclosure, I have to make a confession. I am such a Shyamalan fan, defender, stan, whatever you want to call it.
Love it.
So The Watchers was one of my most anticipated releases of 2024. The second awesome. It was announced, I rewatched Servant so I could watch your episode.
Awesome.
I read the book. And the yes. whole time I kept thinking, oh my God, she's going to crush this. Like, she's going to crush this. And thrilled that you did. I loved it.
Thank you.
What was it about this novel that made you decide this is it? This is the story for my feature directorial debut.
I think there were so many elements about the book, and I'm sure if you read it, you kind of experienced that as well. It's just a really, really scary book. I think the author did such a wonderful job at sort of drawing out this mystery and playing with your expectations as a reader and making you question what world you're in order to kind of touch this much larger, much more wondrous kind of fantastical world. So I was just like in deep admiration of what he had done with the book, and I just really loved reading it. So it felt to me like it would be just kind of an honor to sort of put that on screen and put those visuals into reality.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is such a unique story with that mystery in that it doesn't fit nicely in any one like horror subgenre box, which I think is also like a very Shyamalan thing to do as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, what are the types of stories that you were drawn from? Are these the stories that are hard to place, or like what draws you into a good horror story?
I think for me, like, horror is really a sort of like means of confronting like various fears that we have about different things. And the ones that make me the most afraid are sort of the ones that are kind of outlining something I didn't know I was afraid of, something that kind of surprises me, that I'm like, oh my God, I do have that fear. So I think that's kind of like the hope with this movie as well, is that it sort of talks about this fear of judgment and this fear of being looked at that is very, very much within us all, I suppose. So hopefully it sort of just like preys on that and helps you confront that.
Oh, definitely. There is something so anxiety-ridden about having to face like a full-length mirror for an extended period of time, which is essentially what that box is. So yes. When you were directing on set, how long were you having them stand and just stare out? How long?
Yeah, there was quite a few moments and scenes where they had to kind of look into that mirror and they had to be in that box. It was a very claustrophobic environment, and it was really interesting. We couldn't have any of the crew in there because it was so small. Mm-hmm. So it was just them kind of on the inside, and anytime the mirror was out, the crew would be on the outside watching them like an audience, or kind of they're performing for us. So it was a very interesting, weird dynamic that I think contributed to that feeling of unease.
And I think this is also coming in such a perfect time to tell a story like this, because right now everyone is online. Like, there are people who just exist in this world as if they're constantly being perceived, because they probably yes. are. We're always yes. recording everything. So yeah. I'm curious if that was also a motivating factor in telling the story, and how you think this story can relate to the fact that we are all watchers.
Absolutely. I mean, it's ultimately, I think, just kind of a satire on that exact thing. It is something that, like, I feel very much, and it is a weird, weird part of our society right now, that there is this, like, performative element of everything, where you kind of have to think about how you're perceived in a very unnatural way. Yeah, so it's kind of that idea, and just for me, kind of grappling with like feelings of judgment or feelings of being observed and looked at in this kind of scrutinizing way, and just coping with those emotions.
And on that note, when your dad broke into the mainstream, I'll never forget that Newsweek magazine that was like, he's the next Spielberg, which is
Yeah.
such an insane pedestal to put a person on.
Like insane, I
Like,
know, insane.
absolutely ridiculous. Like,
I know.
that is, you are just setting someone up for failure at that point.
I
That's
know, I
so
know.
cruel.
Why even
But,
compare artists like that? It's like,
right,
yeah.
exactly. Let artists be artists.
Yes,
So I'm
exactly.
curious, do you feel any of these feelings of pressure of like being the next Shyamalan to be making a horror movie, or are you just unbothered with what other people have to say?
I wish I could say I'm unbothered, but I really do care a lot. I'm like very affected by things, but I've done sort of like a lot of deep thought on it and trying to put myself sort of in the right headspace. I think the trying to like honor sort of what my dad has built and knowing that I kind of cannot I'm not there and I probably will never get there to what he's created, and just taking sort of like what he's taught me throughout the process, which is just to tune in to my own artistic instincts and be as emotionally truthful as possible, and do that, yeah, with like kindness and a work ethic. And I think that's the best I can do, and I can feel happy so long as I have done that.
And I loved learning that he did some second unit directing on your
Yes,
movie, which I know
he
is a
did.
role that you've done on his movies. So how does that dynamic shift when now you're the director and you're in charge?
That was one of the coolest things ever, because he was so stressed about getting me the shots that I wanted. He was like,
Oh,
I
that's so
don't think I got
sweet.
this one for you. Like, oh man, like the camera was doing this and I don't think I got it. I'm like, it's amazing. It looks beautiful. I don't know what you're talking about. So it was really fun where we kind of had that role reversal for a moment. He was so into
Oh, I
it.
love that. I mean, 'cause
Yeah.
at the end of the day, like, it's still your dad, and dads want to support their kids in whatever way.
Yes.
And I mean, I obviously don't know your dad, but parasocially, I've always gotten like the that's a proud girl dad vibe from
Yeah, oh yeah,
him.
he's like a total girl dad and totally like involved in that way. It's wonderful.
And so this is kind of like I know it can be a touchy subject, but something that I think gets left out of the like quote unquote nepo baby conversation is that the reason so many people who grow up in the industry continue in the industry is because they grow up on these sets, so they understand the art of filmmaking better than anyone else. So what are the things that you've learned from being on sets and working on sets kind of your whole life that you took on in this film, and what are things that you feel like you're bringing that are wholly unique to you and your creative process?
I mean, I think, yeah, you can kind of like learn by observation a certain level of things. So for me, it was mostly like seeing my dad's sort of emotional journey as he moved through the process, and seeing A, like how disciplined he is, how sacred the kind of art form is to him. And then B, just like how he sort of copes with the that reaction element, and he's incredibly resilient. So it was mostly like me as a daughter sort of admiring how emotionally strong he is, while being on set. And then I think for me it was very much like I only really started to understand like how to make a movie or how to put the pieces together when I started doing short films. So it was very much like something I felt like had to be practiced, skill sets that I didn't really have until I started doing it myself. And I think like my journey has been very much about how can I take this art form that I admire so much and make it suited to me, where I can express myself in the way I express myself, which is maybe a bit quiet and a bit soft, and still get the image that I want or the performance that I want. So it's very much like a journey of that sort of figuring out how I can do it with my own ethics and my own kind of moral standards.
I love that.
Thank
And right
you.
now, I think like the young crop of filmmakers are also coming from backgrounds that like didn't even exist when a lot of like our parents' generation were
Yeah.
making movies, because technology has changed, social media has changed, the way the world interacts has completely changed. So what
Yeah.
are things that you think that you've been able to teach him as a filmmaker?
I don't know. I mean, I think that might be, yeah, like a question you'd have to ask him. I think we have like slightly different styles of filmmaking. I think I'm a bit more maximalist than he is in terms mm-hmm. of my like visual palette. So he always kind of, I think, enjoys like watching like what I, how I'm building the sets or how I'm thinking about the production design elements of it. Because that's just my favorite thing to do. I don't know. I mean, I think we have very different approaches to the art making process and yeah, it's fun to be able to kind of share that with each other.
I love that you said that you are a much more maximalist filmmaker yes. because I think we have been needing a return to like maximalist filmmaking so oh, desperately.
I know, I love it. Like, so much.
No shade to minimalist filmmakers. There's beauty in that as well, but like, I want lush sets, and so thank you for giving me that. Yes. That's not a question, that's just a compliment. and something else that I love about this movie is that there is almost this like fantastical and almost darkly whimsical feel yeah. at times. Yeah. Like I know I've read some interviews that you feel very inspired by Miyazaki, and like yeah. I could like see that throughout cool. this movie.
Oh,
so
awesome.
One, nailed it. Good job. Thanks. But more importantly, you know, what is your approach like in incorporating non-horror elements into horror stories?
I think horror is really just like a language through which to speak in my mind. So it's really the other genres that are at play there that I'm kind of experimenting with. I think for me, I think everything has an element of darkness and beauty to it in this life. And I really enjoy thinking about how to like visually manifest that relationship. So I think that's kind of what exists, like ultimately to me, the movie is kind of an adult fairy tale. So it was very much like going with that mindset that it's more of a gothic flavored, movie about this kind of like odd family dynamic and this woman, and that's kind of how I allowed the kind of tonal choices to be guided.
Beautiful. Thank you. I have time for one last question for you. Awesome. So all I'm going to ask is, what sensation are you hoping audiences walk away feeling once they have seen The Watchers?
I hope there's some leaving with an element of kind of questioning the things around them mixed with wonder. But I love that word that you use, like anxiety. I think it's definitely an anxiety film. And my hope is by the end, you kind of conquer some element of that anxiety.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. Congratulations on an absolute banger of a debut feature. And have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely to talk to you.
Very nice meeting you as well.
And then before we get into your interview with Dakota Fanning, BJ, I know you didn't have nearly as much time with her. What was your takeaway from speaking with Dakota Fanning here? Like what was the vibe like and all of that as you went in?
Oh, she's so chipper and so happy. Like she was in such a great mood, which is not always the case with these junket screenings, especially when you're somebody that is a name like Dakota Fanning, where a lot of your interviews are like, you have 5 minutes. So you're talking to like 100 people in one day, which is so exhausting. Mm-hmm. But she really, like, you can tell she's proud of this movie and you can tell she's proud to have been in it, which always warms my heart, because even if people are going to have mixed feelings about this movie, which I think is going to be the general consensus, is like mixed. I think she did good work in this movie. I think she likes working in the genre space. I'm always going to root for a child actor who is able to successfully transition into adult acting. But she was great. She was a vibe.
Excellent. Okay. So here is your conversation with Dakota Fanning.
So my first question for you is that I know next up you're working with The Strangers creator Brian Bertino on Vicious.
We just finished.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So you've got these two powerhouse names in horror that you're working with back to back. And you also have such a diverse filmography. So what is it about horror that keeps you coming back to the genre?
Well, you know, it's like it feels back to back, but this was shot last July. It's, you know, I just did this. So there's things that have happened in between. And I didn't, the two are so different to me. Like, you know, this film holds a different space to me than Doing Vicious did. Obviously, I'm fresh out of Doing Vicious too. So it's like, it'll take me, I always need time to process exactly what I did. You know, I'll know how to talk about it when it's time to talk about it. But I think for me, I love films in all kinds of genres, and I love getting to explore deeply real, grounded human stuff in a heightened genre, like a, you know, thriller or this kind of surreal suspense horror world that the Shyamalan family, I think there should be a Shyamalan genre, you know, I feel like it's a specific, and then we now are getting to see Ishana's twist on that, which I'm so excited to be a part of. But yeah, I like doing things that feel unique and feel like things I haven't done before, and to be able to have done all different kinds of movies by the end of my career, whenever that is. So I just embrace it all.
Beautiful. And I love that this movie has so many little horror elements from other things kind of thrown in there. Namely your character's name Mina and her sister being Lucy, which is very Dracula. And Mina is one of those great characters because she's such a subversion of what was expected, well, you know, for Victorian women at the time. So I'm curious if that sort of history at all was, you know, a motivating factor in playing this version of like a new sort of subversive female protagonist in a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's super cool. Anytime you have those little cheeky details, I think it's very, you know, makes a story, a movie more interesting. So I loved that little detail. And yeah, I love that, you know, this Mina as a protagonist is a flawed character. She doesn't always do the right thing or say the right thing. And there's messy parts of herself and she doesn't have it all figured out and she's not perfect and not always nice necessarily, you know, and I like I like seeing more characters like that that are as complicated as we all are and as you know, we all people don't always have it together all the time, you know. I want to see characters that are making mistakes, you know, and so I think Mina is a character that is still searching for something and she's running from a past that still kind of haunts her and she feels very broken inside and doesn't always deal with it in the healthiest of ways. And, you know, finding herself in these strange circumstances and sort of being able to heal that part of herself through this supernatural fairy tale world is also very cool. But yeah, I love all the little cheeky nods to the genre and Ishana feels that this is, you know, she wanted to make a fairy tale for adults and I think she succeeded in that.
Absolutely. That's the time I have with you today. Thank you so much for
this. Thank you so much.
Absolutely a fairy tale right down to the tragic childhood backstory and an animal sidekick. So
yeah,
you get to be this fairy tale princess in this story.
That's right. Thank you so much.
And last thing I'll say is just in case people have not caught up with Ripley yet, she was also really interesting in Ripley.
I wasn't
quite sure about the performance that she was giving as Marge early on in the show, but by the time that show wrapped up, I was like, oh, I'm on the wavelength of what she's doing with this character. So yeah, really good stuff there. All right. So, and actually you can go back and listen to an old episode of this podcast where I talked to Steven Zalian, who was the writer director of Ripley, which is streaming on Netflix right now. Okay. So that is going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about The Watchers at slashfilm.com. I will link to a couple things in the show notes too. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.